Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on nature for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media and just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P.
Jump on your bike, let's hit the road. Come on. Fuck the 5-0, man, we out of control. Hey. I'm a bad motherfucker, riding through the night. Yeah. A filthy motherfucker and I love to fight. Picture me rolling on my chopper on red. No love for the other side, no need to be friends. Get the gas, homie, you gotta keep on pushing. Out and out, chin checks, don't you need an ass for the ticket after ticket.
Hello there. Little technical difficulties. As soon as I get it straightened out, I'll be right back. So just listen to this while I'm fixing it up. Hold on 1 second. This one's called Don't Talk to the Cops.
If you didn't see the Central Park 5 documentary, go see that. When I saw that, I only had like 4 years on the job at the time, so I was just learning. But what really was heartfelt was when you looked at those young boys, and I know the whole story. When you look at those young boys who was crying and pouring out for help, and they thought they were going to get it from their parents, the parents didn't even know how to protect their kids. When it came to law enforcement. That's why we educate the community on what to do when stopped by the police. We educate parents because parents don't know, even if you do, which you shouldn't, but if you do give the police department the permission to talk to your loved one, if you do, at any given time, you can stop it. At any given time. But you never should give the police department the permission to speak to your loved one if they're arrested. We tell the young folks out there, don't speak to them. I'm going to use part of my time to just give you a simple demonstration of what I teach young kids. When you're walking down the street, you get a call and the police get a call. If the police stop you in an area, I'm going to give you a Saturday night, whatever area you're at, and the police stop you, do you know why they're stopping you? They're stopping you because you're the only one in that vicinity. So right then and there, you are the perpetrator. You don't know you're the perpetrator because they're not going to tell you you're the perpetrator. What they try to do is stop you by engaging you. How you doing, sir? Or whatever. Sir, did you see a car? Did you hear a gunshot? Did you see somebody run? And what you think is you think, because you're not the perpetrator, right? You tend to think, well, let me help them out or let me defend myself. You don't have to defend yourself. The burden of proof is on them. Keep your damn mouth shut. This is what I tell the young folks, that if that was to happen to you, as you're walking, you say, officer, am I under arrest? No, you're not under, well, then I must be free to leave. And then you start to leave. Let him or her say, no, you can't leave. Well, then, officer, am I under arrest? No, you're not. Well, then I must be free to leave. Well, no, I want to ask you something. Well, officer, am I under arrest? You keep saying that because let me tell you something. If the police had the right to arrest you, do they ever ask you? They do it. So I teach, you just say that. When the officer says, well, listen, you're not under arrest. I just want to know, did you see a car? Did you hear a person scream? Did you hear gunshots? You the officer, am I under arrest? And if they say, well, you know, you're smart because you know what comes behind that. right? Okay, well, you're under arrest. Okay, well, you turn around and you put your hands behind him and say, here, take me. Here. But you don't say nothing. Say, 9 times out of 10, they're going to push you away. Because they're going to say, you know, if they don't have enough, they're going to say, I can't lock this person up. But what you just did is you showed them you're not afraid to get arrested. The other way you handle that situation is you do this. A cop stops you. Excuse me. You live around here. This is what you do. And you look him or her straight in the eye, and you just do this. Excuse me, did you hear what I said? Do you live around here? Can you tell me your name? It's easy. Just don't say nothing. Now they got a decision to make. Either lock you up, beat you up, or let you go. Now there's going to be some derogatory statements coming behind that. But you know what? I guarantee you that 99% of the time, at the end of that confrontation, you'll be walking like this in a way and on your way. That's what you do. Stop trying to prove to them that you're not the person they're looking for. That's up to them to do. Another thing, know your rights. In this book, it's only about 28 pages. I give you what you should do when you're stopped by the police, what you should do if the police come knocking at your door, what you should do if the police stop you at your car, in your car, what the passengers should do, what to do if you're brought to a police precinct because some people don't know what to expect, what to do after you've been violated by the police, how to fight them back, and get in touch with our organizations, because we will come out and we will help you. I can't go down to CCRB anymore. They don't want me down there. Because when I've escorted people down there, they say, you can't come in. You know why? Because when I went down there with some people that was complaining, they placed semantics with a person's words. And I'm sitting there and I said, listen, if this lady said the officer slapped her, then the officer slapped her. You don't have to say to her, well, did the officer inadvertently put his hand up? What are you talking? She's a grown woman. She knows if she's been slapped. Just like grown men, they know if they've been hit or violated. You know, stop making excuses for the police. Or, well, they told me you can't come down here anymore. You know, it's all right. It's okay, because if I can educate enough and you can stand and use that backbone in your spine and stand up for what's right, you'll be okay, because when you leave there, you got us. You got us. And you're going to have your community behind you if they just would stop being scared. We as a people need to stop being afraid.
Well, hello there. Everybody's unmuted. I just can't hear what you said or are going to say. So hold on 1 second. Okay, let me try something else here. We all just got jacked. So let me, hang on. Oh. All right, we're going to have to do something here, but don't go anywhere. I'm going to try and do this to a different way. It seems see. We'll go to, I'm going to go to another server. Hold on. We got a little problem here with the fucking server again. I think they're playing games. Yes, our friends are out front. Okay, here we go. Yep. Guys should be unmuted. Can you hear me? Try to do something. Let's see. God, there we go. Yeah, I'm trying to, see. Yep. There we go. Can you hear me now?
You fucker, you had me muted. You had me muted. Hey, you are slack-a-lacking.
No, I didn't have you.
Maybe you have you.
Yeah, listen.
Hello.
Hello. Listen, I didn't have you guys muted.
Hello.
It's hello, one
truck,
at a time.
It's
wait,
truck
listen.
People, get them some donuts, damn it.
Listen, they're screwing with the server. So that's why I played the thing in the beginning. Then it took me, I had to hang up and call back and then play around, shoot to the other server so you can hear me until they figure that one out.
Oh, thank God you couldn't hear what I was saying. I was saying if get out of your skinny jeans and let's get this show going.
You know, that's why there's a mute button.
You know, don't threaten me with a good time.
Oh! I'm telling you, man, you're buying
them
the wrong donuts. You should be buying them cupcakes.
You ate your Wheaties today, huh?
Oh, I like that cupcake you put on Megan's wall. That looked like so awesome.
Oh, I didn't. Any cupcakes, you know, to get this quickly by, but any cupcakes I post, I have not made. I always say that. I don't take credit for any of that. Those are pictures that I'm storing an online
right.
album for future, you know,
creations.
What may come.
I mean, it was just awesome looking. You know.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. You know, I've seen some massive designs that just
right.
floor me, you know, all on top of a cupcake. But, you know, other than
Am
that.
Am I on?
You're on,
yeah,
Eunice.
You're on,
we can
Eunice.
Hear you.
Oh, jeez.
Oh.
It's nice that someone talked to me.
It's okay. I'm going to call you tomorrow because I need the area location. Because
oh, okay.
I didn't get a chance to look that up, but I'll call you tomorrow on that. Okay, sorry.
All right.
What?
Nothing. Do me a favor, though. Because people have been asking, why do they call your show to talk to each other when they can, and I'll call you tomorrow, or they say this, or they say that, and I say, well, because probably they don't have the time to call regularly, I don't know. So if we're going to do that, let me know ahead of time that you're going to do that, because people are, they're complaining about it. And I can't, there's, you know, I'm at a standstill, because what do? Do I mute somebody? Do I not mute somebody? Do I, you know what I mean? So the show topic today.
Well, that's okay. You have a great show, and I'm going to mute everybody.
What?
Oh.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Nothing. Somebody's feelings got hurt.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, I mean, as much media stuff that gets used, in texting and phone calls and calling your house and doing things like that, and if you can't get your message across sometime between doing all that, then something's wrong, or you're just lonely, I guess. I don't know.
I'm sorry about that, Phil.
It's not your fault, okay? It's not your fault. People want to hear more stories about you in baseball, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's hey, you'd be surprised the emails I get in the comments that are left in the page here.
Yeah, but it goes like this. It's your show. You say what goes. It doesn't matter. Well, it does matter what people think, because that's how your ratings get up, but it boils down to you run the show, and it, you know, people's thoughts of what they think is correct and what might not be correct, et cetera, that's irrelevant, you know. It's what you say goes, and that's it, you know.
Yeah.
And people gotta understand that, you know. Sometimes we do gear off subjects, but we get right back on, you know, and some nights, you know, we're stumped for topics, and we just, you know, ad-lib, we roll with it, and some of
yeah.
those shows have been the best shows, so people have got to understand that, you know, we're not, you're not sitting in a radio booth, you don't have all these people telling you what to say, what to do, et cetera, you know, and it's your show, and what you say goes, and people need to either suck it up and like what they're hearing or move on, you know?
Exactly. I mean, it's just like when we get those ones that want to do with making comments about all the clubs.
Yeah, exactly. This is not the time and the place for it, because this show advocates for anybody that rides. You need to know your rights. You need to know what's going on. It doesn't gear towards one way or the other. It's a neutral zone of information, and there's a time and a place to, you know, deal with that other stuff, and it's definitely not on the air.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, the show is about bikers and everything, but it's also a lot of other things that Phil and Bill have brought into it. You know,
absolutely.
A lot of charitable work, a lot of, you know,
don't get it wrong, Eunice.
I'm not. I mean, you've been a great advocate for my project. You know, I'm not. I don't mean to do that. I, you know, I'm saying not just for bikers and everything, but you're for every person. You know, that's what I'm trying to get across, you know, that you are for everybody and you listen to people, you know.
And another thing people have to take into consideration, Bill has been on a leave, and you've kind of been filling his spot with us women, and, you know, we're not, well, Eunice has a long career of advocacy, et cetera, but other people that call in, like myself, I mean, I've been calling in now for almost 2 years, and I've learned more in 2 years than anything else. And you know, to say that should be for everybody. When you call the show, you have topics that come up that are unexpected, et cetera. But it's knowledge, and people who turn away knowledge are ignorant. That's the real problem. You know, if we don't talk about bikes, if we talk about Eunice in the political aspect, or we talk about Nigeria, or we talk about anything, if you don't know about that subject, it's up to you to sit and listen and really start to think. And this boils down to ignorance of society too, because you can't call a local radio station and tell them what they're going to say, what they're going to do, et cetera, because they have rules that they follow. And
well,
that's how
we ended up here, because we didn't follow the rules.
Well, exactly. And it's like, you know, people have got to understand we're real people. We don't have a script in front of us. We don't have, you know, sometimes we sit by the computers, we sit by phones, we'll read off some information, you know, as we get it. But this is, you know, again, I can't reiterate how much, you know, this is your show, and people really need to understand that, you know, their input is greatly appreciated. You know, because that gives you knowledge to where people are sitting and feeling. Again, you know, it's what you say goes. And as far as I'm concerned, people, you know, just need to sit back and take a chill for a little bit. Because, like I said, I've learned more in the last 2 years calling in on this show and helping where there's help to be needed than I've learned in the last 10. So they should take that into some consideration, seriously. And we're all spread out. You know, Eunice is down south.
No,
Morris,
I'm back north now.
Oh, you're back north. Well, you south and north, you know.
Yep.
We got the East Coast going. We had the Midwest until she hung up, and the West Coast. So there's a lot of information for people to really be, you know, gaining knowledge from, and it's
right.
Kind of sad that they're going to nitpick at, you know, we may gear off subject for a little bit. If they want standards and they want, you know, bullshit like that, they can call the local radio stations and deal with them.
I don't think that was that, though.
You know, I don't understand how people can take a positive radio show, which is this one, and I truly feel it's positive because of the information that does come about of it, and nitpick on a conversation that may gear off for 30, 60 seconds, whatever. You should be sitting back, grabbing your coffee, getting a giggle out of it, and getting ready to hear a topic. And the fact that people can, you know, we can call this show and we can be relaxed and be who we are and say what we feel, you know, they're forgetting that altogether. That's your freedom of speech, your freedom of choice to say what's on your mind, and they're forgetting
that.
Yeah,
and you shouldn't be offended if I say something.
No, I'm not offended at all, you know. Like I said, you know, people can say what they want, but it still boils down to how you want to run the show and what you see fit goes, you know. It is what it is.
Well, with that all said,
go for it.
What are we going to talk about this Tuesday night?
Well, you know, you heard. Did you hear the beginning? The guy was talking about don't talk to the cops.
Right, right. I heard that.
Okay.
Yep.
And it's like Bill and I. Well, Bill said two words: are shut up. Me, I'm kind of a little more outgoing. I want to know. I let him tell me what's up first before I say anything. Usually. Unless,
yeah.
Unless I can, you know, if they got, like, if, a lot of times the lights will go on behind me and they say you should immediately pull over. But I'm not going to pull over on the side of the freeway where I got a chance to get hit by a car. So I'll go to the next exit.
I don't blame you.
If the next exit happens to be 3 miles down, that's not my fault. So because he's got to drive that extra 3 miles to talk to me, they're already pissed. I mean, the last time I got this happened, I pulled over on the exit to where it was safe, and he started yelling at me. And I said, the exact words, you should be ashamed of yourself. You did not see that guy come into my lane and almost hit me. That's why I sped up a little bit and I moved over. No, I didn't see him. I saw you. And you should be ashamed of yourself. And when I went to court, it didn't show up. But that's where I got admonished by the commissioner, who I was just getting ready to say, I want you to recuse yourself because I don't feel you're qualified to hear this case. But I knew I was getting dismissed. So I kept my mouth shut until he said, you were on a Harley? I said, yes. And he said, what kind of Harley? And I said, an FXDX. And he goes, those are well capable of going over 100 miles an hour. Now, to my right are all the attorneys. To my left are the people waiting to get up to the podium and about 20 sheriffs, highway patrol guys, and policemen from various cities. When he said that to me, my exact words were, not that day. So as I thought I'd be out of there in about a half hour, 20 minutes, half hour at the most, I was there for 3.5 hours because my paperwork got lost from the counter in the courtroom to the counter where you get your paper that tells you you can leave and your case is dismissed. 3 hours he made me wait.
Oh, they do that, Phil.
Oh, no. Never happened to me
really?
Before, Eunice. Never happened to me before until I embarrassed him in front of everybody. There had to be 100 people in there just burst into laughter when I said that. My exact words were, very smartass, not that day.
Well, that happened to me at a city council. The city manager had a problem, and I kind of helped straighten it out for him. And then all of a sudden, I was like a piece of shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I walk in one night to the city council, and he sends the mayor over to me. Are you here for a particular reason? And I says, no. He says, oh, well, we didn't know if you were on the agenda. And I says, you would have known if I was on the agenda. So what they were trying to do is shake me up so I'd leave. But I
right.
stayed until the very end. And finally, the city manager's aide come over to me and he says, is there anything I can do for you? I says, yes, go back to your boss and tell him I am not leaving until he comes over and talks to me. So he goes back over, and then he comes over and he talks to me. Oh, Eunice, how are you? I says, what the fuck's wrong with you? And he says, what? I says, you heard me. Now, there's like, I know all the city council people, you know. I says, I was good enough when you had a problem. But all of a sudden, I'm not good enough to be recognized by you. You don't want to fucking blow my mind. And I turned around and I walked out with his mouth wide open.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Oh, no. I was going to say you got your point across.
You bet your ass I did, you know. I mean, you don't, you know. I mean, he, a lot of things could have happened to him. So, a lot.
Yeah.
You know, like the federal government coming in. But don't treat me like I'm some kind of piece of shit. He is no longer, by the way, the city manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the same thing with the representative, O'Flaherty. Mm-hmm. He is no longer sitting on the Judiciary Committee. You know, a friend of mine says, do you know how he left? I said, oh, no, I have no idea, you know, because I have my little ins and outs, too. After all these years, you would think I had it, right? So, but good things have been happening, so that's the main thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good things.
Okay.
So.
Hold on a second. Yeah. We got a call from Illinois, 217. Hello? Hello? Did you want to talk or just listen?
Just listen.
You know, go ahead, Eunice. You got somebody from Illinois wanted to close to Decatur, I think.
Who is it?
Yeah.
That's
someone around. Yeah, the area code is 7, around Decatur or Champaign, Illinois.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for people that don't know. For people that don't know, when you call, I get all your information. And the only reason that's instituted is because of the comments that were made, derogatory comments that were made against motorcycle clubs in general and by name. And I have to notify those people, so there's equal time given. But that's the reason I do that. Go ahead, Eunice.
Yeah. So it's, you know, not actually being in the political, meaning serving as a politician, that they have to answer to God on that. But being around a lot of political people, you know, I've learned a long time ago that I say it up front, and my reputation at the State House is cross your legs when she comes in. I think that's a wonderful reputation, don't you?
Yeah, you should hand them all a piece of string.
Yep. And I'll tell you, the one time that I enjoyed it so much was when the Senate pulled the bill and put it in a conference committee and all the lobbyists went running out into the hallway at 11 o'clock at nighttime. Lobbyists never stay after 5 o'clock, but they knew something was in the wind. And as I was running, because I'm a 73-year-old woman, well, I was 71 at the time, being in there for such a long time, I had to go to the ladies' room and powder my nose. So as I was going by, one of the lobbyists said, I don't know who the fuck she knows, but she got this bill pulled. So when I come back, the State House has a very, very wide corridor. And I tapped him on the shoulder, and he was standing with probably 5 or 6 other lobbyists. And I tapped him on the shoulder, and he turned around, and naturally his face got red. And I said to him, you know, I heard your comment as I was going by. And he says, oh, you did? I says, yes, I did. I says, I have 4 things to say to you. And he looks at me and he says, first of all, you don't know how to say fuck right. And he looked at me, you know. I says, secondly, remember the name. It's Eunice White. I says, and thirdly, you want to know who pulled this bill? It was God. I says, and fourthly, you're not getting paid this week. You know, well, I thought Carmen Durso and Mitchell Garabini, these are the lawyers that I've worked with this bill, they were choking over there. So one of the lawyers who they were talking to, because I watched that walking over to him, the guy says, who is she, you know? And he come and said to him, look down at my legs. And the guy says, what? He says, look down at my legs. So he looks down. He says, you notice I got them crossed? Well, everybody in the state house crosses their legs when she's around. You know?
Yeah.
And I got that reputation of being a ball buster. But that's
no,
the whole thing.
You.
When you really believe in something, Phil, you know, when you really believe in it, and you go to the Judiciary Committee or a conference committee, you don't get up there. At least I don't get up there with a piece of paper when I have to talk about something that's so passionate to me, you know. But you see these other people coming in with briefcases and folders, and they have the aides carrying the folders, you know, and they still don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to take it. You just have to take it. And that's one thing I've never been afraid of, is to speak out.
Mm-hmm. Well,
hey,
this guy here, this guy say the usage of the word fuck. Hold on a second.
One of the most interesting words in the English language today is the word fuck. Out of all of the English words that begin with the letter F, fuck is the only word that is referred to as the F word. It's the one magical word, just by its sound, can describe pain, pleasure, hate, and love. Fuck, as most words in the English language, is derived from German, the word fricken, which means to strike. In English, fuck falls into many grammatical categories. As a transitive verb, for instance, John fucked Shirley. As an intransitive verb, Shirley fucks. Its meaning's not always sexual. It can be used as an adjective, such as, John's doing all the fucking work. As part of an adverb, Shirley talks too fucking much. As an adverb enhancing an adjective, Shirley is fucking beautiful. As a noun, I don't give a fuck. As part of a word, abso-fucking-lutely, or in-fucking-credible. And, as almost every word in a sentence, fuck the fucking fuckers. As you must realize, there aren't too many words with the versatility of fuck. As in these examples describing situations such as fraud, I got fucked at the used car lot. Dismay, aw, fuck it. Trouble, I guess I'm really fucked now. Aggression, don't fuck with me, buddy. Difficulty, I don't understand this fucking question. Inquiry, who the fuck was that? Dissatisfaction, I don't like what the fuck is going on here. Incompetence, he's a fuck off. Dismissal, why don't you go outside and play hide and go fuck yourself? I'm sure you can think of many more examples. With all of these multi-purpose applications, how can anyone be offended when you use the word? We say, use this unique, flexible word more often in your daily speech. It will identify the quality of your character immediately. Say it loudly and proudly. Fuck you!
I love that.
Yeah, I do too.
I knew you would.
That says it all.
Hey,
that says it all.
Phil?
Yes.
Phil, to gear off, I got a text message from the Midwest.
Yeah.
They're in the middle of massive storm. That's why she hung up. They've got hail and the sirens are going off.
Okay.
Oh, Jesus.
So, yeah. So I don't think it was directed at anybody on the,
oh, no
the
worries.
Show. She, yeah.
No worries. I just had to get that out because I'm tired of answering emails and phone calls.
No, that's understandable.
Oh.
But,
yeah.
You know, just so everybody knows, she's in the basement getting cover right now. So.
Oh, Jesus. I'm tired.
Wow.
They get some weird things there.
Yeah, well, that's
real weird.
That's all coming this way, Eunice. I don't think it'll be as severe, you know. But we'll be underwater the next couple of days.
Oh, Jesus, don't tell me that. I got to go work at the soup kitchen tomorrow. And you want to know something? I really enjoy that. You know? I really enjoy it. I mean, if you could see the people, I'm talking about young families with babies and young ones that come in, and you know, you look around, and I say to myself, oh, my God, you sometimes tend to forget what you have, you know, until you do something like this, and I really enjoy it. You know, I had one guy come up to me again, and he says, can I have another sandwich? I says, you can have 5 sandwiches if you want. You know, I mean, that's what it's there for, you know. That is what it's there for.
I've heard that from a bunch of different people, Eunice, people that volunteer for different food pantries or kitchens or, you know, meal programs, et cetera, that they get a lot out of it, trying to give back to the people that just don't have as much.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you know, I went home here, and I went through my closet, and, I mean, I don't have a lot of clothes, but I'm saying to myself, I don't wear this, I don't wear that, I don't wear this, you know, and I just cleaned it out, and I said to my husband, I'm taking these down to the church, you know. I mean, I have become a 73-year-old woman that loves to wear dungarees.
Yeah.
So, really, you know. And, I mean, I'll throw some decent clothes on when I go, you know, to Boston, or if I go out, but I'm more comfortable in them, you know, in dungarees, and I never wore them. I always wore dress pants, you know.
Every time you say dungarees, all I can think of is my meme, my grandmother, because that's what she used to call them.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah.
Well, what do you call them?
Jeans.
Oh, well, I'm
Levi's.
Sorry.
Everybody thinks.
Oh, Levi's, huh? Okay, so see that? I learned new terminology for dungarees.
Well, the other thing I wanted to tell you guys, if you didn't know, that May is Military Appreciation Month. So the other thing I wanted to tell you, so say the next time you see a vet or you're in the airport, you see somebody in uniform, thank them for their service. But the other thing I wanted to tell you is if you're within 100 miles of a VA, you need to go there. Take some magazines, cards, games, whatever.
Okay.
Donate them. But as you're walking in, like out here in California, a lot of times they're outside in a wheelchair. And a lot of people, when they're walking up, they put their head down. Don't put your head down. Look them straight in the eye and tell them thank you. Or ask them if they need anything. Because a lot of them are there by themselves. Their families can't afford to get them out here. Yet we're the greatest country in the world. We can't take care of our vets.
Oh, tell me about it.
There's a woman in the Senate right now. Even though she's the former chairwoman. But she's pissed off because the VA ignored the wait times legislation, which meant that corrective action should be taken. This is something we're going to hold a hearing on and then leave and do something else. I don't want to continue here that anybody's gaming the system, which is what they're doing. I mean, when you go to the VA, I went to the VA not too long ago. And when I sat down to talk to the doctor, he didn't ask me how I was. He didn't ask me what I was there for. That prick asked me how many guns I had at home. I said, what does that have to do with me being here? Well, it's a question we have to ask everybody. Really? At that point, what could I do? I said, no, I'm not going to answer that question. I'm not going to incriminate myself, because the next step is they're knocking on your front door to come and take all your guns.
That's so messed up, because there's been a lot of, I've caught different pieces this week on the local news, so of course it's Buffett, about a lot of the stuff going on at the VA hospital and how many of our vets were just getting pushed along, you know, wait 6 months, people who have cancer and different things like that. And by the time their number was pulled, you know, disease had spread too much. And, you know, the guy who runs all the VA hospitals, they had a couple of tidbits with him on there, and
he retired.
He was, Yeah.
He resigned.
I was going to say, he was put under a very fine magnifying glass.
Yeah, he didn't retire. He walked away.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I'm looking at is, you know, the VA hospital is wide and spread. It's all over the United States. And you're not going to tell me just one person was in charge of continuous years of poor quality management. Now, my uncle fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He was a World War II vet. He's been long passed away, at least 15 years. But I can remember as a kid going up with him to VA hospital in Providence, Rhode Island, and my aunt, the whole ride up and the whole ride back, be complaining about poor quality, poor care, poor everything. And now I'm 45 years old, so take that back 40 years. The guy who, you know, they're putting the magnifying glass to, what happened to the guy before him and the guy before him and the guy before him? That man there, yeah, he may have been the problem, but he's also the scapegoat because they're going to throw him in the hot seat and they're not going to go to the trickling effect of all the people that backed up his bullshit and all the people
that
did whatever. Yeah, but it won't ever come out. It won't ever come out. That's the problem. I mean, the vets have been battling this for how long? You know, it shouldn't be that way. They should have the best quality care possible. Christ, there's enough interns dying to get in to places that are willing to give 100% of their time. And you know, why they're not in VA hospitals is beyond me. It really is. And it's got to, you know, that's got to be something that's taken care of on a widespread, state to state, everybody, you know, because where would we be without our vets?
Now, I got to tell you, Stacy, people ask for whistleblowers, okay?
Yeah.
What happens to those whistleblowers when they whistle? They're not treated very right.
Well,
no,
you know,
usually...
No, but, you know, in 2012, when they passed the NDAA, which is the National Defense Authorization Act, in 2012, the law spelled out several ways the VA could improve delivery of mental health services, as well as all the other services, including the comprehensive suicide prevention program, expanded services for families, better training for providers, more peer-to-peer counseling, and more accurate and reliable measures for mental health care with appropriate staffing. Instead, they fucking moved on to something else.
Yeah,
you're talking about on May 15th in a hearing, which committee members grilled that guy Shinisky, the head of the Veterans Health Care Act Administration, over allegations that some veterans who died waiting to see a doctor. The flawed methods of measuring wait times go back to at least 2000. That's even before the war on terror.
And the like I said, the nightly news over here said 6 months. Now you're saying stuff that goes back years, you know, and again,
media. At the general report, the problem was in 2000, 2005, 2007, and most recently as 2012, were offered several recommendations to help resolve the problem, but they didn't. The IG recommendations they made are still open, and the department still has not implemented legislation offered to improve the situation. Ensure the wait times begin when the veteran contacts the clinic, the VA healthcare, by another provider. Finally, and evaluate alternative means of accurately measuring wait times and analyzing staffing. They didn't do any of it. None of it.
Well, Phil, they never do. You know, it's a news article for a couple of days, and then they have to go on, the news media has to go on to something else.
And
you know,
as much as Obama says he cares about the veterans and everything, he didn't have a fucking clue about this. He found out when that story broke that guys were dying. That's when he found out.
Right.
Next day, that guy didn't resign because of peer pressure, and that guy resigned because Obama threw him the fuck out, and they're trying to get somebody in there to do it now.
You know, I've got to say this. I've got to say this. When I I've met a lot of politicians. Now, our president has hundreds of people around him telling him what to do, and hundreds of people that keep things from him, you know? And the reason I say that, it's because any high-quality person, they have people that work around them. They also protect them, but they also try to figure things out without telling them. And I'll give you a prime example. You know, when I was doing healing masses with the bishop, him and I agreed that any changes in anything that we were going to do, I would be included in on, okay? Now, they have a board of directors for the Diocese of Worcester. Well, they went over the plan that we kind of made out, because he was inviting several bishops to Worcester to hear about healing mass and the pedophilia in the Catholic Church. Well, the people on the director's board decided that I shouldn't have to get up in front of all these bishops and talk about pedophilia, so I should do a reading, okay, and talk to them downstairs at the reception. Yeah, please tell me. Eating, they're going to stop eating? So anyways, they called me to the diocese.
Uh-huh.
And this one Barbara, who sits on the board, said to me, Eunice, we're making a change. I said, you're making what kind of change? And she says, we decided that we'd let you do a reading. I said, you decided what? That we're going to let you do a reading. And I said to her, I don't know how to read. And she looked at me, you know. So I says, when was this decision made? And she says, oh, you know, this afternoon. I says, where was the bishop? And, well, he had a meeting. So I looked at Frankie, who's a friend of mine. I says, Frankie, you better go get him. You know. And she says, well, can't we go down to his office? No, Frankie. You people called me in here. You go get him. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Uh-huh.
You know, they called me in, and he was going to come to me. I wasn't going to him. So when he come in, he says, Eunice, I says, yes, Bob, being very disrespectful, you know. I says, what's this all about? I thought you and I had an agreement that if there was any changes at all, that I would be included to discuss the changes. And he just kind of looked at me, and I says, oh, I forgot. You're just like the president. You let everybody tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bottom line. So with that, I said to him, no, I will not be doing a reading at this mass. And I was so pissed. So when I walked out of there, I said, I'm not going to that mass. And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I waited until everybody was seated in the church. And I was the last one. The doors had been closed. I opened the doors, and I walked right down the middle aisle. And to the right was where the bishops were. And I went right to the front row, because that's where the podium was. And I asked one of the bishops to move over. Now, is that a lot of balls?
Uh-huh.
And he moved over. So when Bishop McManus got up and did his spiel that this was going to be a healing mass, and he wanted to talk about what the Pope had decided about the pedophilia in the Catholic Church and blah, blah, blah. So when he was getting ready to introduce somebody else, I stood up and I said, thank you, Bishop McManus, for announcing me. So what did he have to do, Phil? He had to call me up to the pulpit, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
When I got done, they all applauded, and I walked off the altar, down three steps, and right down the main aisle and out the door.
Mm-hmm.
But I made my point, didn't I? You know, that's what pisses me off. Because we blame the person that's in charge, but people don't realize that there's other people telling them what to do and what they don't, and they tell them a lot of things that they you know, they decide on their own what they're going to do about it.
Right.
And that's through any place in this world. You get a board of directors that get together and they're going to fire Joe Blow, but Joe Blow doesn't know about it. We'll hang him out to dry. And it's the same thing at the State House. If you don't do what we want you to, the old boys on the Hill say, if you don't do a vote for what we want to be voted or not voted, then you're not going to get any extra money by us pointing you to committees.
Mm-hmm.
See, when they sit on a committee, they get more money. And it's about time we get rid of half of them.
Well, they're all millionaires. Just, they're 90%
oh, yeah.
of them are
yeah.
If they want to, you know what? They want to solve a lot of the problems, don't pay them. It should be a free job.
Mm-hmm. It should. You know, I mean, it's just, it's terrible, but that's it's gone on like that for generation after generation. And I'm not knocking the lay person because I'm a lay person. And the only reason I know about it is because I got involved in about it. But people nowadays that vote, they do not. And this is a good one. And this was told to me by a friend. What you do is if you have something that you really want to be voted on, you call one of your representatives or your senator and just say, listen, you know, could you tell me how you're going to vote on this bill? All right, naturally he's going to say, oh, I'm going to vote for it. Well, you call him back 5 days later and you know, give it a phony name and ask him about the bill. How is he going to vote on it? And if he says to you, I really haven't decided, then this is a guy you don't vote for.
Correct.
You know? But people don't take the time to do that. They just get into that little box and they say, oh, yeah, I remember the name Patrick. Well, we'll vote for him, you know. Or I remember. That's why they spend so much money when elections come up.
Mm-hmm.
People don't take time and go out and listen to them speak or have the balls to say, you know, what are you going to do about this problem? But,
you know,
I do that. You have to do that.
Stacey.
All right. Not everybody who listens to this show knows I won't knock the president. That's not my deal. And that's whether I'm right or wrong. I have a respect there. And, yes, people have argued with me on that, but I don't care. The big problem is, okay, what you said, you know, Obama dismissing the dude the next day, et cetera. But he didn't see how bad PTSD was coming along with the vets. We have shootings on military base. Guys who were pushed to the fucking limit without care when they came home. And it's continuing to rise. He cannot say that he did not know something bad on the horizon is brewing, and again, ahead of the country. But that's the biggest bullshit line I think I've ever heard in my entire life. When you've got things like major military bases and one poor man, you know, shooting his family up because he's done too much time over there in Afghanistan or wherever he's gone, and when he came back, the proper care wasn't put into place, or someone said, you know, no, this man should not go back. He needs more treatment. And they're just pushing these guys like toys coming off a fucking conveyor belt. And
I had a friend of mine. He waited a year and a half. After he was still on active duty, but he waited a year and a half to get in.
It's terrible because, you know, I'm not going to mention no names, but somebody really close to me, and it's not my daughter because people automatically think that because they know that she was prior Army. But somebody really close to me went in the service at 18 and went over to Afghan twice, had something hit the tank they were in, messed up his leg, got his leg fixed. Now he's out in Korea. This is a kid that just turned 22 years old. And when he came back, and, of course, we all visited, we had a welcome home party, et cetera, et cetera. He said it. He says, I'm shooken up. He says, I have post-traumatic stress. He says, something loud goes off. He says, my mind goes elsewhere. And he was on leave, coming home, getting ready to go to Korea. How can you do that to a person? Now, this is a young man who signed up to protect his country and serve and do what he saw as honorable. But how do you keep continuously sending people back that you know have seen some pretty harsh casualties or got wounded in a bad casualty? They need help. They need therapy. They need someone to be able to talk to. You don't just pat them on the back and say, hey, in 6 weeks you're going back, or in, you know, a month you're going here. That's
well, you know,
wrong.
It's like I told you guys before, you know, there's a couple of people out on the base that send the guys back. They send them down to the shop to find Bill or me. And a lot of times, we can tell who they are just when they walk in because of the demeanor. It takes them a while to get used to the surroundings, and the conversation starts with motorcycles. And Bill's got it down to a beat, man. I mean, I stood there the other day and watched a guy walk in, start walking around looking at motorcycles. He waited about 10 minutes. Hey, pal, is there anything I can help you with? And the guy kind of jumped a little bit. But hey, it's okay. And
it's sad.
That guy's been there every day since.
No, it's sad that they don't give these guys enough time off in between tours of duty, which anybody who knows, when you sign up for the military, that's going to come into play. But it's just sad that with the way we have, you know, psychiatrists out there by the bountifuls, okay, nowadays, people deem them as godsend, that they don't have better things in place. They should have therapists down there who are military right in the war zone, and when shit happens, they should be right by these guys' side, all women, there's plenty of women, and trying to see, you know, should this person go back? Should they go home for a while? You know, and it's horrible. It's horrible. And, you know, something more needs to be done. And it's a good thing that you and Bill are there for the vets, but there's not enough people like you and Bill or people who don't know, et cetera. So, again, it falls back on government. You know, if you've got a person that's willing to sign a piece of paper and say, I'm going to risk my life to better my country, then you need to have something in place should that person have some type of breakdown. And they don't. And it's, you know, that should be their first rule, because you go into the military, you know there's casualties, you know there's accidents, you know everything. But they don't have that as their first rule of, you know, thought process to make sure that their own are okay. And it's bullshit.
Well, Mara, it is bullshit, and I'll be the first one to say it. But if people, you know, a lot of people don't read newspapers anymore.
Nope. They,
you know,
they rely
they
on
don't.
The internet, and they don't check
right.
the sources to see if they're valid or not.
They don't, and that's the sad part about it. That's why you have people like Bill and Phil, you know, because they've been there, they've done that. You know, a lot of guys don't want to remember what they did when they were in the service. I mean, I have a dear friend. He was in Vietnam, and he was also a paramedic in Vietnam. You know, let me see. Frankie is probably 72 now. And do you know he never went to the VA?
And that's my uncle.
Yep. Never went to the VA. And I said to him, Frankie, you could be getting, because, I mean, he was really damaged being a paramedic. He says, you don't want to even know half the things I'm saying. And he's writing a book about it, being a paramedic, you know, when he was in Vietnam. And I said, come on, Frankie, you know, let's go see what you can get. Because he wasn't getting too much of a good income. So he went, and they finally gave him 75%. And he just went back again, and they've given him 100%. You know.
At 72 years old? They
I'm telling you.
A long time
yep.
ago.
That's yep.
My uncle, too, was in Vietnam. He was part of the first Marine troops,
but that's
I guess.
What I'm saying you. Saying, Stacey.
Yep.
A lot of the guys that were in Vietnam got turned off so bad because of the way they were treated when they come home, number one, which they were treated terribly
yep.
when they come home, you know, that they just wanted to forget about it.
My uncle is a Marine through and through. He raised his kids very strict. He's an honorable man, but I can tell you this, honestly, I have never, ever heard him tell one story of Vietnam. Not once, not ever. Not even to my father, who was his
No, they
friend.
Never. They never did.
And
Frankie never
and,
told me it.
And he refuses to step foot in a VA hospital. And my other uncle, who was a Marine too, and he had the same logic. He never talked about it and refused to step foot in a VA hospital. Is dead from Agent
right.
Orange.
Yeah.
So,
but I
you
mean,
know,
a lot of the Vietnam people are like that, you know? I mean, it's, hey, my father was in World War II. I mean, he went in after I was born in 41.
Right.
You know? And I remember my sister Barbara finding some pictures, you know? And my father went spastic. And my mother says, I told you not to keep these around. And it was pictures of some of the things that they come up against, you know, and,
yep.
and some of them took pictures of what transpired. But I remember my sister Barbara telling me that one picture was of a woman that was hanging who had been pregnant, and they just, her stomach right open.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, you know, and it's too bad, but people don't have the time, Stacey. And that's the sad part, you know. When you get my age, you have the time. But they're on such a whirlwind roller coaster, you know, that they don't have the time to pay attention. And they say, let somebody else take care of it.
Well,
until it happens to them. Or a member
uncle,
of their family.
When my uncle, the one I was telling you about that fought the Battle of the Bulge, World War II, when he passed away, my aunt went out and got a frame, a shadow box frame. It was like 2 inches thick. And for the
mm-hmm.
first time in all the nieces and nephews and grandkids' lives, we got to see my uncle's medals. He had Purple Heart, amongst other things, and we were all dumbfounded. We were like, why weren't these put up? And she said, because your uncle wouldn't allow it. He did not want anything from World War II around at all. And we got to see pictures for the first time of him in the wheelchair coming home from, you know, World War II, et cetera, and, you know, and different things, because my aunt used to work. The women that built the artillery and different things like that, she used to do that stuff. And for, you know, the first time in our lives, and we were all 20 and 30 plus years old, we got to see what exactly he did in World War II. And, you know, he just didn't want no part of anybody knowing, you know, what had transpired over there. And, you know, I wonder to this day if he was given more help, you know, would he have ever been able to talk about it? And the real sad issue here is these guys who have gone to World War II, there's not many of them left around. And their stories are history. Their stories are to be told and to listen to for people to learn from. And because the government has given them the most shittiest end of the stick, you know, with World War II veterans, we're, you know, there ain't many left. There ain't many stories to be put in the history books. And that's a shame right there. These men gave all to get nothing.
But I'll tell you something, Stacy. When they come home, they were welcomed home.
Right.
In World War II. Nothing like Vietnam, you know. And it's too bad that these things aren't taught in our schools, you know. But
I personally think the only reason why this country went gung-ho with the military was 9/11, because people actually seen, hey, you know, we're just as vulnerable as anybody else. And, you know, I'm just going to leave that at that, because, you know, we've got all the conspiracy theories about 9/11, et cetera, et cetera. But the world that was asleep finally woke up, and they realized that the only way the country stays safe is with their armed forces. Because with all the little, excuse my French, pussies out there who are against the military, you know, and they're against violence and this, that, and the fucking other, well, get your goddamn ass out there to the front line. That's all I have to say to that. You know, I truly, truly feel if we didn't have the things that came into play with 9/11, this country would be sitting back half-divided like Vietnam, where you would get these fucking Lulus that are going to run their mouth off of, you know, men that went, and women, to give everything they have. And, you know, that's sad, too. Because it
shouldn't
have taken...
You know how much it's changed?
But it shouldn't take an extreme act of violence, craziness.
Because people are too lazy, Stacy.
They're
that's
cheap.
What I said. You get all these yuppies, you know, that said let somebody else take care of it. You know, and yes, 9/11 woke up a lot of people's eyes. But World War II, the wives and the mothers and that, they went and worked in the factories. And
right.
They were a part of that war. You know, they took charge. Well, we have to take our husband's jobs over so we can get this plane out, so we can get these guns made. You know, Worcester was the biggest gun place. All our guns and uniforms were made here in Worcester, and the shoes, the Army shoes, you know.
My family's all Massachusetts-based. Like I was telling you, my aunt used to work and do all kinds of stuff for the guys fighting World War II. She was really big into that, and, you know, those were little stories we heard here and there, and after he passed away, we heard a lot more of it, you know, but... I mean,
my mother went to work at American Steel and Wire.
Right.
Taking my father's job over in the 40s. You know, I mean, it's, and a lot of people don't realize that women did that. They had to keep their home going. You weren't getting very much money from the service. You know, let's face it.
When I said people are sheep, I listened to a story over this weekend, and it dawned on me that most of America say people are sheep, and they don't even realize what they're saying. They're kind of going along with the stead frame of people talking. And the story goes like this. If anybody knows anything about sheep, they're not the smartest animal. And they can be herded like 300-400 strong by one shepherd. And the thing is that the sheep learn to identify one voice, and the shepherd can identify every single one of his sheep and know when one is missing, and et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is that you get another person in with the shepherd, and you get them to start hollering orders at the sheep, and the sheep don't do nothing. They're just fine-tuned to one individual, the shepherd that raised them from the time they were little to the time they were adults, and the time more sheep came along, they only listened to one person because basically they were trained to listen to one person and not the voices of many. And people, when they say, you know, people are sheep, they need to understand the logic behind it. And most people don't. You know, we've got a great big world with a lot of voices to be heard. Why back yourself into one small area and listen to just one person as the godsend to everything? And
because
they don't know how
to listen to other people.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know,
but I was blown away with that story because it made so much sense. And the fact that people are going around saying, oh, people are sheep. And if you honestly answer them, what is that, you know, look at them dumb and say, what does that mean exactly? I guarantee you one out of every maybe four people are not going to know the correct theory behind it, you know, and that's pathetic. It really is.
Well,
true.
You know, I have that in my own family, and
we all do.
I mean, yeah, I've told you about my daughter who has, you know, a very tough life, but this is something she chose. Well, she was back in the hospital 2 weeks ago, and she had called, and I says, I'm not doing this with you anymore. You have to make your own decisions of what you're going to do. Well, I get a call from her, and she says, Mom, I don't want to go back to that place that I was. And I says, well, what do you want to do? And she says, I need help. First time she ever asked for help. Mm-hmm. She used to ask for money, but it's the first time she asked for help. So I talked to my husband, and we decided we'd bring her here and make rules and regulations because she does need help. And she's abided by him. But she has two daughters, and I think I told you about my granddaughters. They're very, very disrespectful. So the other day, the youngest one who's 20, who just had the baby with a pedophile, called and asked if she could come over with the baby. So I went and picked her up, and I had a talk with her, and I says, I'm going to tell you right now, you're coming into my home. I don't want to hear one cuss word out of you, and you better treat your mother with a lot of respect and your grandmother and grandfather. And if one bad word comes out of your mouth, you'll be right in that car, and I'm going to bring you back. And she, you could see the other sweet side of her. But, you know, Stace, you can't blame them. Now you can because they're of age. But they never knew what it was to have a good home because it was always chaos, you know, always totally chaos. And Billy Joe never, you know, he beat my daughter down, and she allowed him to do that, and I'll be the first to say that. But I understood where she was coming from. I was stronger than her. My first marriage, my husband was a Marine, and this is in the 50s and 60s now, early 60s. I had to do everything he told me to do. I couldn't wear makeup. I had to iron those fucking shirts with three pleats in the back, and they better had been straight. Do you know what I'm talking about, Phil? The Marine shirts?
Yeah, I
had to
have
three pleats.
Yeah, I ironed my own shirts.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, it was just totally chaos, my life with him. Finally, I had to take a stand, and I took that stand, and I moved out. And I had to go to Salvation Army to get three cribs because my babies were a year apart. Well, I got a small twin bed and two cribs. And I slept on a mattress. And the apartment I had was so bad, Phil, that I had to take the children's blocks, you know, with the numbers and letters on them, and put one under each end of my kitchen table to make it straight so the food wouldn't fall off it.
Uh-huh.
But I fought. I says, no man's ever going to hit me again, you know, and I meant it. And I says, I will not get married until my children. No man is going to come in here and tell me how to raise my children. And I had to be strict. But you want to know something? My girls never left home until when Kim got married at 25 and Deanne was 26 when she left. You know, but her daughters did not know what a good life could be. Mm-hmm. And they got tied up, you know. They don't have nice lives. They each got a baby now. And they're not married. I mean, this, you don't have to be married. That's not what I'm saying. But they have guys that say, you're going to pay me when you get your check. You know? So sometimes you just have to shut yourself off to that.
Right.
You can only do so much. And then I have two other children that are doing wonderful. As a matter of fact, I meant to tell you, Phil, my husband retired from the union. He was the president of the union. And they made my son the president of the union.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Very proud of him. And he wouldn't have got that position if he didn't learn from my husband, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's great. So I know I've talked enough tonight, right?
That's fine. Feel better?
Oh, I feel great. You know,
there you go.
I really feel great. You know, so it's. But I do. I can't miss your show, even if I don't say nothing. And there's been times that I haven't even got on the show. Which was fine, but I listened.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen that yourself, you know.
Right.
But I'll tell you something. There should be more people like yourself. I don't know how you do it. Work and be married and do all these benefits and still do the radio show. I mean, when do you sleep?
I won't tell people from work are listening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's sleeping when he's sending me crazy text messages. That's when he's sleeping.
Oh. Oh, well, you know, I mean, really, I mean, people should take a look at that. You know, I mean, I'm patting you on the shoulder because you deserve it. And I think you know me well enough. If I don't think you deserve it, I wouldn't be patting you on the shoulder.
I hear you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
There's just sometimes it's like I said in the beginning, when topics go awry and people go off on, you know, their agenda, sometimes
yeah.
It's okay, sometimes it's not, because there's some people that listen around the world, you know, like I can tell you right now, okay, there's, like right now we have, three guys listening in China. And they have no contact outside of China. If they catch these three guys, they'll kill them. And this week, like today, today as a matter of fact, there's 17 people from China who checked in and out on this. And they listened to those. And like right now, we have in Australia, there's 4,949 people listening. Germany, there's 8,339. Just different place. Turkey, there's 820 people listening. Belgium, there's 138. Spain, there's 2,400. France, there's 4,162. Now, it's been in the news forever, but the Ukraine, there's 4,048 people listening there.
That's
Canada,
great.
Canada, France, Indonesia, Bulgaria, French Guiana, New Zealand, Guam, Spain, United Kingdom, Netherlands. It goes all over. And sometimes people want to hear things, and sometimes they don't.
Yeah, right. And that's the sad part. That's the sad part I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
When it's something that people can't deal with, they don't want to listen to it. You know, I've done a lot of speaking engagements on pedophilia, and people have asked me, you know, are you still a Catholic? And I tell them, yes, that I am. And they say, well, God should have stopped this. And I says, you know, it took me a long time to realize that God gave us all our free will and our free mind. And any of these horrible things that happen in this world are man-made. You know, they made the choice to do this.
He's going along with what you're saying right now. Here's a guy that talks about the American dream. Check this out.
But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks. And it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pocket. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interests. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long, where they tell you what to believe all day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged, and nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. You know? And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on. The fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
That never gets old.
Nope. Never does. Never does. And it's so true, you know. It's so true. But you want to know something, Phil? I won't be here when that happens. I will not.
You never know. You never know.
Oh, hey, listen. Can you see a 96-year-old woman on a motorcycle?
Sure. See them all the time.
You know. Come on, Stacey, now. You got to just picture me doing that. Hey, did you see my
Eunice, here's the thing, Eunice. I can picture it. I can picture you cruising down the highway, you know, on a bike and doing your thing. I, you know, maybe not a bike, maybe a trike, you know, but I totally can see it.
Well, thank you. Did you see my great-grandson? I put it on Facebook.
No, I'm going to have to stop by and check it out.
Yeah, yeah. He is a cutie. But, you know, I'm too old for babies. Too old for babies. You know, they cry and I get upset. Oh, God. Well, what?
Well, Phil, can I, like, toot my own horn?
Sure.
You can toot whatever
you want. You can toot Phil's horn.
No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Although he does have a friend. No, I'm only kidding. All right. Everybody who, like, calls the show knows that the last 6 months I've been busting my ass full time at school. I've missed a couple of shows. There's a couple of shows I think I even fell asleep on. Thank God I managed to put the mute button and nobody heard me snoring. But I got my final GPA score today, and I pulled in a 3.12. And at 45 years old, full-time back at school, I am a rock-solid B. And I've had a lot of shit take place over the last 6 months. And, you know, that's my personal stuff. Phil pretty much knows the deal. But I'm going to toot my own horn that, you know, maybe next semester if I get that 3.50, I'll make the dean's list. But a B for me, because I hated school my whole life. I'm a high school dropout with a GED who just worked her whole life. That's a pretty big accomplishment at 45 years old, you know? So I'm happy at this moment. I'm going to sleep good tonight dreaming about freaking cupcakes.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something, Stacey. You should be very proud. And I wish I had had the balls and the opportunity to do that.
Dean, didn't I tell you earlier it takes balls to be a woman?
Yeah, you
yeah,
did.
It does. Yeah,
you did.
And it, I
you
went.
Know,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, you know, I don't think people sometimes realize, you know, you say you're in college and they kind of look at you like, okay, but they don't realize how much self-discipline you have to put on yourself to come home, open up the book, study for hours on end, pass the test. They kind of look at it like, okay, high school, but it's nothing like that, you know, and it's hard. To say, you know, my days in the kitchen, because I'm a culinary major, were a piece of cake, they weren't. You know, lugging around 25-pound pans and, you know, you've got your chef up in your face, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, you have to take it. You have to take it. And, you know, there was a couple of points there where I was, like, ready to stop. And if it wasn't for my best friend telling me, you know, she sat me down. I was in a boatload of tears, and she's like, "You just, you know, you got to finish what you started." I might have actually walked away because, you know, when you're 45 years old, you ain't looking for any added stress. And college is stress. Okay, how you slice it, how you dice it, it's added stress to your life. And I'm just, you know, I'm pleased right now that, like I said, my first semester I was a culinary major, you know, I walked away with a rock-solid B average, and the best part about it is nobody can take that away from me because I earned it, and that's it.
That's great. I went to the seventh grade. My mother was on welfare, had to get out and work. Back then, they made you go to work at 15.
Right.
Never could open my envelope, my pay envelope, but had to go to my mother. When I got married, and I left my husband, I put the children in daycare, and I worked three jobs.
Yeah.
And I promised myself my children would have an education. And back then, you didn't get student loans either. And I did. My children got their education. And I worked hard. I mean, I worked in a factory during the daytime, and I was on piecework. So when you made your piecework, you could leave. You know, it wasn't like 6 to 2. You could leave once you made. And I made sure I was like the top stitcher there, you know. Then I got home, and I would clean and cook and get the kids ready for, you know, go do their homework with them. I had a woman living with me, and then I go tend bar at 8 o'clock at nighttime until 2 in the morning. Then
and
on
then
the weekends,
start it all,
I... Yep.
Start it all over
then,
again.
Yep, and then on the weekends, I clean offices. So I don't even know what it was to have a day off. And you want to know something? I taught myself. If there was a word that I didn't understand, the greatest gift that a friend gave me was the dictionary. And I would know that word inside out. You know, so I had a tough life, but it made me tough.
Well, my daughter, you know, because I've raised both my kids pretty much hand over foot by myself and have never asked anything of the sperm donor, my ex-husband. But the thing is my daughter has told me through the years, she's like, Mom, your strength inspires me. And I never knew what that meant. I thought she was just a teenager, babbling on, giving me a pat on the back, okay, you know, tomorrow's another day, it's cool, until she joined up for the service. And now she works full-time, and she's going to school for nursing. And she did her 4 years with the Army. You know, she got honorable discharge. She did what she had to do, et cetera. And I sit back and I look at my daughter, and I see so much of myself. And, you know, only over the last couple of years have I realized that maybe I did shrub off in a good way on her, you know, because I had to do like you. I had to, you know, work two jobs. There was a time where I was working a double on Saturday, a double on Sunday, and third shift come Monday night. And then I had another part-time job during the week, you know, and I provided, no matter what I provided, they weren't let down by my, you know, what I gave to them. I wasn't one of their casualties, or so to say. And, you know, and she told me the other day that just the fact that she, you know, she said to me, she's your age. She's like, you got a few health things going on, and you're still grinding tooth and nail to, you know, establish whatever it is that you want to establish in this lifetime, you know. And that made me feel pretty damn good because, you know, our life wasn't easy. It wasn't, we weren't in the projects. It wasn't that poor, but we were under strict budget, you know, because I was the sole source of income. And, you know, I look at it now, I wouldn't trade anything because I've got two stand-up children that know manners, that respect people, that give their all, and that's what I put in them, you know. So when my time comes, it ain't going to make a difference because I'm going to know that I, you know, I may not have been able to give them Disneyland vacations, but I gave them morals, values, and the know of respect, and that's all that matters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I you know, Stace, I got to say this. My daughters are 51 and 50. And what I could not give them, they gave their children everything, never taught them that they had to earn stuff, you know?
Same way.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then you get these kids that think you owe them.
Yep.
I don't know if I told you what happened at Christmas time. If I did, please stop me. I told you I was estranged from my two granddaughters with my oldest girl. And their father is dying of cancer. And as a matter of fact, he's in the hospital again. And he finally told them that, I have to tell you, it wasn't your grandmother that gave up on you kids. It was me that told her that she couldn't see you. So they had called at Christmas time, and they asked if they could come over. They wanted to talk to me. And I says, okay, and I'll just call her. Say her name is Joan. She's the youngest one. And she come in with this smart-ass attitude, you know. And she says, our father told us that, you know, you didn't give up on us, but he's the one that told you you couldn't see us anymore. So I says, well, that was very nice, but I don't think that's going to get him into heaven, you know. So they said, do you love us? I says, yeah, I love you. I just don't like you, you know. And I says, I'll be right back down. So I come upstairs in my room, and years ago I had taken two shoe boxes and put their name on each one of them, and at Christmas and their birthdays, I would buy them the cards and put money in the envelopes. So over the years, let's say 12 years now, 12 and 10 years, that's what I did on their birthdays. I never sent them a card, you know, because I did a couple of times and they never got them. The cards were opened up and the money was taken out. So I just put them in these boxes over the years. So I come downstairs with the boxes, and I handed each one of them a box. And like their eyes just popped out of their head when they seen them. They pulled a few envelopes out, and I had the dates on them and the years. And they goes, oh. I says, I told you I loved you, but I don't like you. So with that, I put the covers back on, and I brought the boxes upstairs. So when I come down, they says, oh, you're not going to give us those boxes? I says, no. Why? I says, because you know how to respect people. And until you do, they stay in my closet. And if I run out of money, I might just open up those envelopes myself. They didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
You know? But that's what you have to do. That's what you have to do. And like I said to him, I love you, but I don't like you. And that's so true. You can love somebody, but not like them. And they have to prove to me that they can change, you know. And if not, then they're going to have to wait until I die. And like I said, maybe, you know, I'll get poor and I'll have to use their money.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll do it. You know, I will do it. But
I was raised with the same values. My father never gave anything away. You earned it. You did your chores. You minded your manners. You didn't act up in church. You got your grades. But when he gave 150%. You know, and I think that was one of the best learning lessons ever was, you know, the short amount of time I had my father around, because he died at 47 and I was only just about 22. The short amount of years I had with him, he instilled those values that I also got to see live on through my grandmother, his mother, and she, you know, she was the main culprit of who instilled those values in him. So I got many more years of learning, but it's sad that the children nowadays just, you know, they expect a cell phone, they expect an Xbox, they expect everything under the sun, and they have no clue at all what it's like to, you know, earn anything. They have that sense of entitlement like you were talking about, and I blame not so much the parenting, but so much of what society has put into place that, you know, you raise a child by a book's standards of what they deem is fit. And, you know, in some cases it might hold true, but I think in the bulk of the cases it does not. You know, you have to have some discipline involved, and that don't mean beating your kids off every wall in the house and taking your jollies out, you know. It means to install some values, to make them learn that, you know, when you work hard for something, you appreciate it so much better. Hence the words, what's freely given. I was raised with two things. What's freely given is freely given away because you don't appreciate it. You give somebody something, they're like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, put it up on the shelf, it collects dust, it breaks. You're like, oh, whatever. But when you got to work your knuckles to the bone or do extra chores or save extra money, whatever, when you get that item, oh, you appreciate it. You appreciate it more than what you realize. And we don't do that nowadays. The society does not raise their children like that at all, and it's sad. It really is.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. My daughters, when they wanted the chick jeans and stuff like that, and they were in high school,
yeah,
and they had a part-time job, they had to save for half of it.
Yep.
And then I would give them the other half, you know? Yep. And it's amazing. I used to say to them, they broke my dryer, Stacy, like 3 times, the belt on it. So I said to them, you break it one more time, I'm not getting it fixed. And I didn't. And let me tell you, when they had to dry their jeans on radiators, do you know how stiff they were?
Oh, yeah, they're stiff and wrinkly. Yes.
Right, right. And I'll never forget going to my daughter's house, Deanne's, and she's saying the same thing I did. I told you, make sure you put more than one pair of jeans in that dryer, you know. And I'm laughing. I thought it was funny. And she says, what are you laughing for? I says, because you sound just like I did, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, it's totally amazing, you know, that they pick up that quality. But they never stick to it.
No.
You know?
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to wear the designer jeans because my mother and father both fought because at the time when those came out, Chip, Calvin Klein, Gloria, whatever, Vanderbilt, those jeans back then were $50, $60. And back
no
then,
kidding.
That was really expensive. And they instilled in me that, you know, an average pair of jeans with a decent top, you look just as good as what you do with $50 jeans on your ass and, you know, $100 top. And I did good because I raised my daughter that way, and when she got her first job, I said to her, I'm like, you want all them Aeropostale and, you know, crazy amounts of money pants? I'm like, you're going to buy them on your own. Well, she outsmarted me, Eunice. She saved her money. She watched for sales, got coupons online, and every time she walked into Aeropostale, I swear to God, she walked out with a bag full of clothes, and the most she paid was $25 because that's all she felt was reasonably fit for clothing.
Well, that's great, but, you know.
Yeah, and she had jeans. She had jeans, Eunice, that she wore from ninth grade all the way to 12th grade, which nowadays, get a child to wear the same pair of pants 2 years in a row, that's like pulling teeth. And she would, you know, come her senior year, a couple of her friends were like, haven't you had them pants since freshman year? And she said, yep, and there's nothing wrong with them, and I'll continue to wear them. And, you know, that made me feel good because my daughter is not superficial like that, where everything needs to have a name on it in order for her to get by. She's not like that. So, you know, I know my granddaughter will be raised the same way. So
mm-hmm.
That's a positive.
Well, I would say to them, I realize you're still in school and I realize that you have a part-time job, but you do have a day off and your room better be clean, you know, and I'm not doing it because if I do it, you're going to be sorry. So they were sorry. Because I went in and I threw everything. I didn't care if it was clean, dirty, what, of their clothes in bags, trash bags.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I locked them up in the shed. And they'd say, did you see this, Ma? Yep. Did you see that, Ma? Yep. Well, would you get them for us? Nope. What do you mean, no? You're going to have to buy them back. And they said, what? I said, you're going to have to buy them back. And I made them buy every piece of clothes back.
Good for you.
Well, you know, I didn't have to go in and clean their rooms anymore, did I?
No.
You know? But I never hit my, Stacey, I never hit my kids. I had an egg spatula.
Yeah.
And my kitchen table was a steel table.
Yeah.
When I hit that table with that egg spatula, you can imagine what the noise was.
Oh,
and that used to happen when I got hit in the head.
And I, you know, I says, if I use this on your ass, you're really going to feel it, you know. And they knew it. I mean, I had to be strict with them. And we had our loving times every night before they went to bed and before I went for my second job. You know, there was always kisses and hugs. And even as old as they were, when I come in from work, I would go into their room and kiss them, you know.
Well, my dad had a three-strike rule, and one lesson it took only one time for me to learn. He asked me three times, you going to do your chores, get the dishes done? Yep. Going to do your chores, get the dishes done? Yep. And then I decided to go outside. He hollered at me, and he's like, you going to do your chores, get the dishes done? I said, yep. I came in 2 hours later to find all the kitchen dishes in my bed. That was the last time I ever pushed my father to the three-strike rule. And that's all he said. He's like, three strikes, you're out. He said, deal with it. And he walked away from me. And every pot, pan, plate, silverware, glass, bowl was in the middle of my bed, wet, dirty, disgusting. And, of course, the mattress had to dry. I slept on the floor that night. But he wasn't violent. He didn't smack me up all the walls. He asked very patiently. And, you know, I pushed him to his point. He wanted, you know, we had chores assigned to us every single day, and they needed to be done. And that was it. And I learned my lesson real quick. And, you know, I tell my kids that story, and they laugh. Oh, Pepe didn't do that. I said, oh, yes, he did. I'm like, ask your grandmother. I said, that's the straight-up truth. And they think it's funny. But, you know, I also do the three-strike rule with them. I just, you know, I won't go put dishes in their bed. That's the only thing. But they will get punished, you know. And that's that.
My daughter, Kim, was 17. She decided she was going to leave home. And I says, okay. And she did something in school, and I had grounded her. And I come home from work, and this is like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, and she put, like, her pillows together to make it look like she was sleeping on her side. And
oh, yeah.
I said to her sister, where is she? And, well, she went out on a date. Oh, really? So I went downstairs and waited on the front porch for her to drive up. Didn't put the front porch light on. And she drove up with some guy in a van. And I went over and knocked on his window, and he rolled it down. And I says, do you know how old she is? Because you knew he was in his 20s, you know.
Oh.
And he says, yeah, she's 19. I said, nah. I says, would you come out here so I can talk to you? And he says, sure. And my daughter says to him, don't go out there, you know. So he come out, and he's leaning up against his van with his hands crossed in front of him and his legs spread apart. And I says, you're not going to see her anymore, are you? And he says, yes, I am. I says, no, you're not. And I got him in the groin so bad that this guy went down.
Yeah.
I had slacks on, and I need him. And he got down, and I took my foot, and I put it on his chest, and he's got his hands around my feet, my leg. And I said, do you see what's sticking in my pocket here? And he says, no, I don't see it. I said, well, I'll tell you what it is. It's a .38, and I'll blow your fucking balls off. You're not going to see her anymore, are you? And he says,
Didn't I tell you the feds
no.
listen to this?
Well, good. I'm glad they are. I don't care. And
the lights just went out on the truck out front.
Good.
They're wanting their donuts.
You know? But you know something? It worked. It worked. And she left home. And I told her she was going to leave the way she come in with nothing. And then 3 months later, she called. She was the only one across the street. And she goes, Mom, can I come home? I says, got your job? No. Well, get your job. Call me when you do. So she called me back. She says, I got my job. I says, you in school? Because I knew she was because I checked on it. And she says, yes, I am. I says, well, the rules haven't changed, Kim, in this household. So if you come back, you've got to still live by the rules. She come back and never left until she got married. So those are the things I had to do back then. And you want to know something, Nara? They were the best things I could have ever done.
No, that's Stacy.
Yeah.
I mean, Stacy, I'm sorry. It's past my bedtime.
Okay.
I never realized.
That's okay. To everybody listening, I just want to say thank you. And I might be here tomorrow. I might not. I'll do a post when I get a chance if my day's running good. And then to close this out, I was going to do a little bit of Bruce Springsteen to Born in the USA, since I think everybody needs to hear this. And that's the 60-second mark, so I just want to say good night to everybody, and here's a little Bruce Springsteen. Talk to you soon.
Good night.
Yes, good night.